So we'll have to self-moderate, I guess, which can be sometimes difficult for PhDs. I'm Dr. Amy Schober. I work at the University of Florida at the Gulf Coast Research and Education Center. And I'm going to talk today about some of the work that my student has done using some composted dairy manure solids in simulated residential landscapes. It's a very different system than some of the things that we've been talking about throughout the week, because construction sites, typically residential sites, they're very disturbed. When they come in and change the land use from a more rural to an urban land use, they typically are scraping off the topsoil or burying the topsoil, depending on the conditions under which they're working. A lot of times in our situations, they're bringing in fill materials, and there's a wide range of variation in the chemical, physical, and biological properties of these materials. Our typical lot size right now in Florida is about 40 foot on the street and 100 feet back, so they end up compacting almost the entire lot in order to make it so that the proctor density is correct for building the home. And they also are artificially draining the landscape, and they're installing a lot of impervious cover. I'd say approximately 80% of the lots are covered by the home. What happens then is that we get this really wide range in physical, chemical, and biological properties of the soil, but typically some of the things we can say is they're not in very good shape. We usually have compaction and poor structure. In Florida, we have mostly sandy soil, but we have situations in urban landscapes where we actually see a good amount of clay. We have variable nutrient content, high pH because of the calcareous construction material they're using, and typically our biological activity is very low. And just to give you an idea, this is one of my colleagues. He's about 5'10", and this is all fill soil that they've imported at a site near our center. What we're doing is we're kind of looking for some easy and cheap ways that developers can come back in and fix up or improve the quality of their soil before they install the landscape package, which is typically some St. Augustine grass sod, a tree, and 2 to 5 shrubs that don't grow very well because the soil conditions are so poor. And there's been some evidence that just even doing some spike aeration or shallow tillage to only about 6 inches depth will improve some of those conditions, like improve infiltration rate. But most of the literature suggests that you really need to do deep tillage or subsoiling to break up that compaction. Unfortunately, that's usually not an option, as they've already come in and buried the electric lines and the cable lines and the irrigation system. Another suggestion is that you can add organic amendments, typically compost. And these are 3 rates that I found in the literature. More than 25% by volume to the top 46 centimeters, or 10 to 15% by volume to the top 30 centimeters, or even 25 to 30% by volume to the top 15 centimeters. So you can see it's kind of not a whole lot of guidance on how much compost you should apply. And nowhere in any of these publications do they talk about the properties of the compost. And when we use this rate, you're going to see what we found with regards to NMP. It's kind of shocking. We had a couple of research objectives with this. We wanted to evaluate the effect of compost and tillage on the soil physical and chemical properties, and also the potential for nutrient losses in leachate and runoff. And this is from simulated urban landscapes. And the reason we're looking at the potential for nutrient losses is because urban landscapes are under fire in Florida. They're having things like fertilizer blackout periods where you can't apply any fertilizer to your lawn during the summer months, which is funny because that's the growing season. So this is a huge point of contention in the state of Florida. Just how we went around ahead and set up our plots, we scraped the area bare of vegetation. We kept most of the topsoil. We ended up burying it, but what we did was we buried these lysimeters, and then we compacted the field soil that was there with a vibratory plate compactor. And we went on top and added about 4 inches of unconsolidated fill material, which then had treatments, compost, and tillage applied to them and the landscape installed. And this is what it looked like when we were finished. We planted everything in early March of 2008, and we had 6 treatment combinations that consisted of 2 compost rates, either no compost or compost at 256 megagrams per hectare. That's 25% by volume to the top 6 inches. We had 3 mechanical treatments. We either did nothing, we tilled it to 10 to 15 centimeters, or we pulled aeration plugs. And we followed the fertilizer and irrigation recommendations based on the University of Florida IFAS. We then looked at soil properties in the top 10 centimeters of soil every 3 months and collected leachate and analyzed that for nitrate, ammonium, and orthophosphate. To give you an idea of the properties we're looking at, our soils in Florida, they all fall on that lower left corner of the soil textural triangle. So we had a very sandy soil, 80 to 90% sand. And the topsoil fill is the stuff we put on 4 inches on top of our native subsoil, which is actually the field soil we compacted. Just a little thing to notice is this pH is about neutral, 7.5. It had some construction debris in it. And it actually had higher organic matter content than we would typically see in most of these field soils because this nice black pile got mixed into that. But you can see most of our soils are always high in phosphorus around us. We mine phosphorus from our soils. And then the other nutrients, they range low to medium. Some of these things I'm going to show you with the soil properties is not really anything we didn't expect. We expected by adding a lot of compost would improve the soil conditions, and it did. Looking at the bulk density under our, we had split the plots with ornamental and turf, and for this particular one, we had to analyze them separately due to an interaction. We found no interaction between the tillage and the organic matter. So what happened is it's just whether or not we added compost. So all of my slides, you'll only see the compost data and the unamended soil. And on the y-axis, you're going to see that soil property or leachate property. And on the x-axis is time. So in this slide, we're showing we had a significant decrease in bulk density after we applied the organic matter, and that persisted pretty much throughout the study of 1 year. We also increased the soil organic matter, which makes sense if you add a large slug of compost. By 52 weeks, by December, we were actually not seeing, by December, we were actually not seeing a significant difference anymore. If any of you know anything about Florida, it's pretty warm and wet, and so we expected rapid oxidation of the organic matter. But we're still seeing that it's showing to be a little bit higher. This dotted line was our baseline where we started. Same thing with field capacity. Adding the compost increased the field capacity throughout the duration of the study. And soil pH was kind of interesting. We started out at 7.5 with that fill soil that we analyzed. And our unamended soil is actually going up in pH over time while our compost amended soil is going down. And that's just because of the nature of the water that we're using for irrigation is coming from a limestone aquifer. And the pH of that irrigation water is about 8.5. So as we were irrigating these landscape plots, we were actually increasing the pH of the soil. Whereas adding that compost, which had a lower pH, was acting more as a buffer to keep that pH from increasing. So I kind of kept this till this section because I'm going to talk about what happened with the nutrient losses from these plots. So I wanted you to have the compost analysis fresh in your mind. So you can see the compost, this dairy manure solid that was drum composted, had a pH of about 6.6, and it had a C to N ratio of about 14 to 1. And our nitrogen content is 13 grams per kilogram, and our EPA 3050 digest P is about 5.41 grams per kilogram. And I look at this calculation, I did this calculation about 10 times because I said this is no way that this could be right. But when we followed that recommendation for 25% by volume to the top 6 inches of soil, we added 3,300 kilograms of total N per hectare and 2,700 kilograms of EPA 3050 phosphorus per hectare. Clearly, somebody should not be making broad recommendations like this without looking at the compost properties. So look at what we have with the malic one phosphorus. With adding that much phosphorus, we completely expected to see that the compost would increase the soil test P, and that's what we're showing here. The composted is higher. But then we went ahead and we collected the leachate from those bins underneath the plots, and we aren't seeing phosphorus losses. This is orthophosphate load coming out of those plots. And you can see that the lines are pretty similar, and we're not seeing any significant difference between whether or not we added compost to that soil. And what I think is happening here is that's really a function of the forms of phosphorus in that compost and the pH of the soil. The pH of our soils were still around neutral, and you expect to have a lot of calcium phosphates in your dairy manure, which is why I think we're putting this material on and the phosphorus is insoluble and it's not moving off. I should mention that all the plots were, we put gutters on them so we could collect the runoff, but we didn't get any measurable runoff from the plots, so all of the data I'll be showing you is just for leachate. For nitrate load coming out of the leachate, we did see a significant difference between the compost and the non-composted plots. And what we were finding that we had an initial flush of nitrate coming out in that leachate. I measured the nitrate and it was below detection in that material, but I know that there was some nitrate in this material, and I completely expected it to be leached out with the first couple of rainfall events and the irrigation that we provided to establish the plants on the site. So here's where we saw a difference. By 10 weeks after we added the compost, there was no longer any significant difference. But what we did find was we found a whole lot of ammonium coming out during the growing season, and this is in grams per hectare. Right around here at 13 weeks, we start to get a spike where we have the composted soils are losing a lot more ammonium in the leachate than we're losing from the unamended soils. And that, again, is going to go back to the Florida climate. This is the rainfall distribution during that time period, and you can see that 11 weeks corresponds with late May, and 25 weeks after treatment corresponds with late August. And it's at that time that we're getting a lot of rain. We typically see that rainfall pattern where we have really hot, dry days, and by the middle of the day, we get a huge thunderstorm and get a very nice, large precipitation event. So what was happening there with the ammonium is that the microbial mobilization of that nitrogen, they were mineralizing that N, and there was way more, as you could see, than we needed for the plants. In fact, when we did the calculation, that 3,300 kilograms of total N per hectare is equivalent to turf grass requirements for 14 years. So we had obviously more than the plants needed, and we have very sandy soils with low sorption capacity, so we're losing that ammonium. So we made a couple of conclusions from this. We see that compost definitely can improve the soil conditions, and I didn't show any of the plant growth and quality data, but on all the composted plots, the tillage didn't make any difference. It was where we added the compost. The plants were greener, they established faster, and they looked better. Was that because we improved the soil properties or because we added more N than those plants needed? We can't say that, but our guess is the nitrogen and phosphorus. One of the things we think, though, is before we make this broad kind of recommendation, we really need to take account the properties of the composted material, because if we don't, these people still apply inorganic fertilizer on top of this compost application. So they're actually adding more N than we added. And the second thing is that that may be a significant source of N to our springs. Now, and if you reverse that and you have people using yard waste compost, a very woody material with a very high C to N ratio, you could actually have the opposite effect where you immobilize a lot of the nitrogen. So it's opened a whole bunch of questions, and we have a lot more research to do in order to make good recommendations for builders and developers to improve their soil in Florida. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Was, were your pads impermeable, or were they, so when you, you had your little frames on a pad, did, was there any ability for, say, any water, to move?
Okay, the frame was actually holding the 4 inches of topsoil, and wasn't a pad, that was the field soil underneath, and the leachate collectors were buried underneath that.
So do you have any data from your leachate with your hand valleys?
That is all the leachate that I collected from under those, yeah.
The DEP allows folks to put actually 2 feet of compost to a site, and even more, some in the town area have been up to 8 feet. Have you ever sent, you know, looked at those crazy places?
No, I haven't actually looked at that, but I think, you know, we're making these recommendations without taking into account the nitrogen or the nutrient content in these materials, and I think they're looking at more as a waste disposal or a one-time reclamation, which there are some, I think that for DEP is, it, that's waste disposal. They're saying how much they can get rid of, but, right. That's pretty scary. Okay, I guess we'll have the next